men and women feel like women. Sharing that isn't a big deal after the initial novelty. It's how the rest of you feels that's personal and embarrassing. She took our bowls to the sink. You wouldn't be able to tell that from the ads. Her voice dropped. Feel how it feels to her. Well, you know, people who pay to have a jack installed often do it out of sexual curiosity, or something deeper. They feel trapped in the wrong kind of body, but don't want to do the swap-op. I shuddered. Understandably.
People do it all the time, she said, teasing, knowing how I felt.
It's less dangerous than jacking, and reversible. Oh, reversible. You get somebody else's dick.
Men and their dicks. It's mostly your own tissue.
Used to be inseparable. Karen had been male until she turned 18 and was able to file with National Health for a swap. She took a few tests, and they agreed she'd be better off outside in. The first one's free. If she wanted to go back to being a male, she'd have to pay. Two of the Jills that Ralph liked were ex-males, trying to earn enough to buy their dicks back. What a wonderful world. People outside of national service did have legitimate ways to earn money, though not many of them were paid as much as prostitutes. Academics made small stipends, larger ones for people who did hands-on teaching, only a token for people who just did research. Marty was the head of his department and was a world-renowned authority on brain-machine and brain-brain interfacing. But he made less money than a teaching assistant like Julian. He made less money than the greaseball kids who served drinks at the Saturday night special. And like most people in his position, Marty took a perverse pride in being broke all the time. He was too busy to make money, and he rarely needed the things you could buy with it anyhow. You could buy objects with money, like handcrafts and original art, or services, masseur, butler, prostitute. But most people spent money on ration things, things the government allowed you to have, but didn't allow you enough of. Everyone had 3 entertainment credits a day, for instance. 1 credit would get you a movie, a roller coaster ride, 1 hour of hands-on driving on a sports car track, or entry into a place like the Saturday Night Special. Once inside, you could sit all night for free, unless you wanted something to eat or drink. Restaurant meals ranged from 1 to 30 credits, mostly depending on how much labor went into them. But the menu also had dollar amounts, in case you had used up all your entertainment and had money. Plain money wouldn't buy alcohol, though, unless you were in uniform. You were rationed 1 ounce of alcohol per day, and it made no difference to the government whether you parceled it out to yourself as 2 small glasses of wine each night, or as a once-a-month binge with 2 bottles of vodka. It made abstainers and people in uniform sought-after companions in some wobbly circles, and perhaps predictably it did nothing to reduce the number of alcoholics. People who had to have it would either find it or make it. Illegal services were available for money, and in fact were the most active part of the dollar economy. Penny ante activities like home brewing or freelance prostitution were either ignored or taken care of with small regular bribes. But there were big operators who moved a lot of cash for hard drugs and services like murder. Some medical services, like jack installation, cosmetic surgery, and sex change operations, were theoretically available through National Health, but not many people qualified. Before the war, Nicaragua and Costa Rica had been the places to go to buy black medicine. Now it was Mexico, though a lot of the doctors had Nicaraguan or Costa Rican accents. Black medicine came up at the next Friday night gathering. Ray was on a little vacation in Mexico. It was no secret he'd gone there to have a few dozen pounds of fat removed. "I suppose the medical advantages outweigh the risk," Marty said.
"You had to approve the leave?" Julian asked.
"Pro forma," Marty said. "Pity he couldn't put it against sick leave. I don't think he's ever used a day of it."
"Well, it's vanity,"
Belda said in a quavering voice.
"Male vanity. I liked him fine, fat."
"He didn't want to go to bed with you, darling," Marty said.
"His loss."
The old woman patted her hair. The waiter was a surly, handsome young man who looked as if he'd stepped out of a movie poster.
"Last call."
"It's only 11, Marty said.
"So maybe you get one more."
"Same all around?" Julian said. Everyone said yes, except Belda, who checked her watch and bustled out. It was getting toward the end of the month, so they put all the drinks on Julian's tab to conserve ration points and paid him under the table. He offered to let them do it all the time, but it was technically against the law, so most of the people usually demurred. Except Reza, who had never spent a dime in the club except in payoffs to Julian.
"I wonder how fat you have to be to go to National Health," Reza said.
"You have to need a forklift to get around," Julian said. "Your mass has to alter the orbits of nearby planets."
"He did apply," Marty said. "He didn't have high enough blood pressure or cholesterol."
"You're worried about him,"
Amelia said.
"Of course I am, Blaze. Personal feelings aside, if something's happened to him, I'd be stopped dead on 3 different projects. The new one, especially, the empathy failures. He's pretty much taken that over."
"How's that coming along?" Julian asked. Marty raised a palm and shook his head.
"Sorry, didn't mean to..." "Oh, well, you might as well know one thing. We've been studying one of your people. You'll know all about it next time you jack with her."
Reza got up to go to the bathroom, so it was just the 3 of them. Julian, Amelia, and Marty.
"I'm very happy for you both," Marty said in a distant tone, as if he were talking about the weather.
Amelia just stared.
You have access to my string," Julian said. "Not directly, and not for the purpose of invading your privacy. We've been studying one of your people, so naturally I know a lot about you, secondhand, and so does Ray. Of course, we will keep your secret, for as long as you wish it to remain a secret."
"Nice of you to tell us," Amelia said.
"I don't mean to embarrass you, but of course Julian would know the next time he jacks with her. I was glad to finally get you alone."
"Who was it?"
"Private DeFollette."
"Candy. Well, that makes sense."
"She's the one who was so hurt about the death last month,"
Amelia said. Julian nodded.
"You expect her to crack?" "We don't expect anything. We're simply interviewing one person per platoon."
"Chosen at random," Julian said. Marty laughed and raised an eyebrow.
"We were talking about liposuction?"
I didn't expect a lot of action the next week, since we'd have to break in a new set of soldier boys and start with a new mechanic as well. Almost 2 new ones, since Rose, Arlie's replacement, had no experience other than last month's disaster. The new mechanic was not a Neo. For some reason, they broke up India Platoon to use as replacements. So we all sort of knew the new man, Park, because of the diffuse platoon-level link through Ralph, and Richard before him. I didn't much like Park.
India had been a hunter-killer platoon. He'd killed more people than all the rest of us put together, and unabashedly enjoyed it. He collected crystals of his kills and replayed them off-duty. We trained in the new soldier boys 3 hours on, one off, destroying the fake town Pedropolis, built for that purpose on the Portobello base. When I had time, I linked up to Carolyn, the company coordinator, and asked what was going on. Why did I wind up with a man like Park? He'd never really fit in. Carolyn's reply was sour and hot with confusion and anger. The order to decompose India Platoon had come from somewhere above the brigade level, and it was causing organizational problems everywhere. The India mechanics were a bunch of mavericks. They hadn't got along all that well, even with each other. She assumed it was a deliberate experiment. As far as she knew, nothing like it had been done before. The only time she'd heard of a platoon being broken up, it was because four of them had died at once, and the other six couldn't work together anymore with the shared grief. India, on the other hand, was one of the most successful platoons they had, in terms of kills. It didn't really make sense to split them up. I was the lucky one to have Park, she said. He had been the horizontal liaison and so had been directly linked to mechanics outside his platoon for the past 3 years. His cohorts, except for the platoon leader, had only had each other, and they were a fun bunch. They made Scoville look like a Pedro lover. Park liked to kill non-human things, too. During the training exercise, he occasionally popped a songbird out of the air with his laser. Not an easy task. Samantha and Rose both objected when he zapped a stray dog. He sardonically defended his action by pointing out that it didn't belong in the AO and could have been rigged up as a spy or booby trap. But we were all linked and had felt how he felt when he targeted the enemy mutt. It was simple, obscene glee. He'd cranked up to maximum magnification to watch the dog explode. The last 3 days combined perimeter guard with training, and I had visions of Park using kids as target practice. Children often watch the soldier boys from a safe distance, and no doubt some of them report to Dad, who reports to Cody. But most of them are just kids, fascinated by machines, fascinated by war. I probably went through a stage like that. My memories before 11 or 12 are vague, almost to non-existence. A byproduct of the Jack installation that affects about a third of us. Who needs a childhood when the present is so much fun? We had more than enough excitement for anybody the last night. Three rockets came in simultaneously, two of them from the sea, and one, a decoy, coming in at treetop level, launched from the balcony of a high-rise on the edge of town. The two that came in from the sea were in our sector. There were automatic defenses against this kind of attack, but we backed them up. As soon as we heard the explosion, Alpha knocking out the rocket on the other side of the camp, we stifled the natural impulse to look and turn to watch in the opposite direction, facing directly out from the camp. The two rockets immediately appeared, stealthed but bright in IR. A flak wall sprayed up in front of them, and we targeted them with our heavy bullets about the time they hit that. Two crimson fireballs. They were still glowing impressively in the night sky when a pair of flyboys screamed out to sea in search of the launching platform. Our reaction time had been fast enough, but we didn't set any records. Park, of course, got in the first shot. 0.02 of a second ahead of Claude, which made him smug. We all had people in the warm-up seats, it being the last day of our cycle, and the first of theirs. I got a confused query from Park's second, through my second. Is there something wrong with this guy? Just a real good soldier, I said, and knew my meaning was clear. My second, Wu, didn't have any more killer instinct than I did. I left five soldier boys on perimeter and took the other five down to the beach to police up debris from the missiles. No surprises. They were Taiwanese RPB-4s. A note of